next and last stop is
Atlantic Avenue, Barclays Center.
Stand clear of the closing doors, please.
Boomer and Geo on the Fan. It's a lot of Nets podcast.
I mean, the only Net fans you know? The only what? The only Nets fans you know?
At least they've got some self-aware.
Man. I mean, come on, man. Or are these guys?
Welcome back to Only Net Fans You Know podcast. I'm Peter. Happy New Year and welcome back to the podcast. I have a great guest lined up. Mike Biseglia from Bad Weather Fans podcast. I think it's just a great conversation and what he called one of the most negative Nets podcasts he's ever done. Our guest today is an award-winning podcast producer, a veteran in the New York City radio game. He's also a friend to all cats. He's a great guy and also a pillar of Nets Twitter. Catch his podcast, Bad Weather Fans. Welcome to the show, my guy, Mike Biseglia.
What's up, Pete? How you doing? I appreciate the warm introduction. I do love my cat, Leon. Unfortunately, Nets town right now is in a bad place, but that doesn't mean we can't have fun BSing a little bit and talking some Nets and you know, in the state of all the crap that's been happening.
Yeah, obviously you've been a Nets fan for a very long time. You've had your podcast for, a couple of years now. You've had Richard Jefferson on. You've had a couple of players on. You're someone who I watched before I even had a podcast. You were always very nice to me in the DMs, so it's really cool to have you on and whatnot. So thank you for taking up your time. You got another show to do in a little bit, so we're gonna cut straight through with this. And what is going on with this team? We jump into the new year. It's 2024. New year, new team. I don't think so. They wind up getting killed in a back-to-back. Was it 112-85 against New Orleans? Ugh. 112-101 against Houston. They're shooting around 37% from the field, around 30%, I think maybe even in the 20s from three. The defense is giving up over 40% from three. What is going on? I have my own theories, but I'm interested to see what you think.
Yeah, it's a really interesting one because the Nets early in the year were playing really well. They seemed like a really cohesive unit for the lack of talent that they had. You felt good about this team. With all the injuries, everything that had gone on, you know, everybody's like, oh, we didn't have Cam Johnson, but we're 5-5. Ah, we missed Cam Thomas for a stretch of time, but we're 11-10 or whatever it was. And then they beat Phoenix in Phoenix on the second game of the West Coast trip. They're 13-10. And you're like, all right, you know, they're going to lose some games here in the West, but this team can play. This team is fun. And then it all just disappeared fast. And you understand like a West Coast trip, hard, tough loss versus the Golden State Warriors. You get it. Okay. On the back-to-back against the Nuggets, you get it. The Jazz game, okay, it sucked, but it's the end of the West Coast trip. Oh, that was awful, but okay. Blown out by the Knicks, and then it's just been a disaster since with the two wins versus Detroit. And I really do think that there was something rotten that really got exposed in the game versus the Bucks, where the Nets got too cute and they got too smart for themselves. And unfortunately, they were living in the past with the era where it was Kevin Durant, Kyrie Irving, where, okay, you're going to rest guys. Okay, you're playing these games. But when you don't have that type of talent anymore, it was really disrespectful to the fans. It was disrespectful to the players. And I think at that point that Jacques Vaughn lost the team. And I think now it shows on the court where they have no chemistry. Nothing good to look forward to. It's chuck up threes, a couple of moments where they'll make a shot, but you never feel like they have a run in them, and you're just waiting for the bottom to drop. And that's why, as a Net fan, you're just in this state of like, this sucks. They suck, and I don't know how the hell to cure it.
Man, you just went through a nice little rant, and I love a lot of things that you said because I agree with maybe two things. One, that they suck, and two, that JV's lost the locker room. And besides that, you completely lost me. And I'm going to tell you why. How do you not tell your players what you're going to do that day, right? How do you not let Mikal Bridges know that he's only going to play a certain amount of minutes, right?
Yeah.
I get upset for the kids that win the game, the people that spend, you know, thousands of dollars in the seats in the front row. But if I, normal person, Peter, goes to a game, I spend $25. If you're telling me this team could have a better season or Mikal Bridges could be healthier if I watch the bench play a game, I love the Nets. I don't care. I really don't. But I do, like I said, I do understand for those other fans that, you know, that paid the money and the kids. I see you on that part.
I totally agree with you. And I think that's what's really the most frustrating part is if you're going to be in any relationship, you're going to have fights, there's going to be problems, but you have to be communicative with each other. You have to communicate. And if you're not communicating to your team, your players, what the hell your plan is here, and it's just bad business, and it's just not a good way to set the foundation. Like, all this thing about the Nets culture, if you really just remove it and you look at them isolated and take away this idea of culture, it's terrible. There's no trust with each other. They're not playing as a unit, and this idea that this is like this lovable group is ridiculous. It's rotten. This team is rotten, and unfortunately, I think as Net fans, we look at this and we all just kind of stare at each other. Like, I had Alex today, who's my Knicks podcast partner, and he's like, "You need to go on a rant, or you're so angry." And I'm like, I did a video, and I was like, "Alex, I'm dead inside. I'm just not even angry. I'm beyond it. I'm just like, this team stinks, and it's hard to just get like emotional about them anymore because of how bad they played."
And I have a couple of theories of why I think that is, per se. And it goes down to management. For me, it just seems that they push the Twins a lot. And the offense in particular, when you have Ben Simmons running the point, it looks fun. When he's, you know, he blocks someone, they're on a fast break, we get a dunk or whatever. Or he's driving and creating a three for somebody. But now that Ben Simmons is not here, this looks like an offense that was made for somebody else. You can't even play Mikal Bridges and Cam Thomas together. They can't. Like, I have a list of the worst two-man lineups for the Nets this year. Mikal Bridges and Cam Thomas, I think, are second or third, and Cam Thomas is on most of them. Your best scorer is not made for this offense. Sean Marks, the guy that was, we're always prepared. Everything's fluid. What happened? Shit's not fluid now.
No. It's like, where do you begin? You know, you talk about the offense, how bad it's been. And then, unfortunately, you could make the same disgusting arguments about the defense. And you almost expected the offense to have its struggles. But you hear on paper about how defensive-minded a lot of these guys are individually. But as a collective whole, they are a terrible defensive team. They have done a terrible job guarding the three-point shot in particular during this losing streak. I think teams are shooting 43%, and I was shocked to hear it was that low because I've done, like, you know, you're watching these games, and we all can feel it where you're sitting there on your couch, and it's like, all right, they got it to 8 versus Houston, and then there's a drive in the paint, and they kick it out to, you know, somebody, name the player, and it's like a wide-open three, and before it goes up, you go, well, now it's 11, and it just happens every time. So even to your point about the offense being putrid, the defense has been just as bad or worse. But I think the offense being bad is almost scarier in so many ways because, well, I don't, maybe not in so many ways, but because it was actually decent to start the year and really good. And you were like, oh, if the defense would come along. But the offense has just taken so many gigantic steps backwards, where earlier in the year there was ball movement, fluidity, guys in double figures. You didn't know who was going to be your leading scorer one night. Now it's like Mikal Bridges, 6 for 17. Cam Thomas, 0 for 14. Cam Johnson's actually played well during this stretch when he was struggling. He's probably been the brightest spot on the Nets offensively. Spencer Dinwiddie can't shoot. I mean, the list goes on and on and on, and it has just been, it's been a rough stretch. And I think the Nets need, even if, you know, Pete, even if they're not going to be great this season, I think just for all of our fandom, We just need to see a win just to have like a moment of not this crap. Like, we need to just beat the Thunder and feel good about ourselves for 24 hours.
Oh, yeah. Like, listen, we've taken losses before. We've seen our team win 12 games for the entire year. The way that they're losing now is just so, like, boring. It's so bad. Awkward and frustrating.
Yeah.
I looked up a couple stats just, you know, just for fun, right? I have Mikal Bridges the last 10 games. 16 points, 37% from the field, 26% from three. That's your bet. That's your guy. Dinwiddie, my guy, the guy who I always rep, I always defend. This is the last 10 games. 11 points, 34% from the field, 25% from three. Cam Thomas, of course, he's, what is he, like 1-for-20? The last, like, quarters.
It's bad, yeah.
You know, like, it's bad, whatever it is. The last eight games, 13 points, 35% from the field, 18% from three. And I guess these guys, and I guess you could throw in Cam Johnson, but he's doing very well. So, obviously, I'm not going to include him in this. But three of your top four guys that kind of build up the offense are completely shit. Like, I can't believe that all these three guys are in a slump at the same time.
Yeah, it's been rough.
Help me out here.
I don't know. It's one of the weirdest. It's just so weird to see a team all go bad at once. And I think because of what happened in the Bucks game, in the losing before it, the Piston wins, and then the losing after it, it's just been kind of it's been brought to the surface. For even though it's a bad losing streak, something feels worse about it. And I think a lot of reasons are, you know, people could talk about the 12-70 season, but there was the idea of John Wall and there was the lottery. So at the very least, you're like, all right, we're going through this, but, you know, maybe we'll get a top tier pick. Didn't happen. Became Derek Favors, who, you know, in turn ended up becoming D Will, right? And then the rest is history with the Brooklyn Nets on that side of things. But now you're like, okay, well, we don't have picks. Now I'll even go back before where, like, younger teams, at least when they, okay, you don't have your picks, but you're playing young players. You can see them develop. This team is now where you're draft pickless on your own picks. You've got guys in the mid-range area. You're not playing the younger guys. It's one thing if you're winning because that cures everything and no one gives a shit. But when you are losing, you don't have picks and you're not playing your younger players, it is very frustrating for a fan base to get behind it because they're like, what am I doing here? There is nothing to root for. And to your point, these games have been so bad and so boring, at least in the past, like when they've been on losing streaks, they were in the games. All these games, start to finish, are just putrid.
It just feels like a cancer.
Yeah.
And I, you know, don't want to point at a certain player because I don't even know if it's that. But I think the cancer is that JV has kind of worn out his welcome.
But I think you're right. I think Vaughn doesn't have the command of the locker room right now, and it's just too much of the best friend vibes when it's working. But then when it's not, I don't know if there's a full respect there, unfortunately. And I think that has caused issues there where they're not all together. They're not united. They don't look at the coach with the respect that's needed for them to be successful for whatever reason. And maybe the Bucks thing triggered some of that, or there was something brewing beforehand. I don't know. But it just doesn't feel like all the components here work, where you have a coach that's lost his players, the players that aren't trying, and it's a recipe for, you know, turning the games off with 4 minutes and 20 seconds left because they're down 20, and you're like, I'm done.
This is a problem I have with Net fans that say, we got to get rid of JV right now. Not that I'm going to defend the guy, but I believe he's making a lot of money. Was he making maybe $3 million, which is, I think, a lot for a head coach? I may be wrong. His salary might be a little higher. But I think we're still paying Steve Nash.
Probably.
The point I'm going to make over here is that, are we really going to be paying three head coaches? Us Net fans, we don't care, obviously, but it's going to be up to the owner. Is the owner really going to want to pay another coach, clean up another coaching staff? And someone kind of corrected me and made a decent point. How would you feel about Kevin Ollie taking over?
Yeah, well, I know that there was earlier in the – it was after the Hornets loss, right? Yes, it was after the Hornets loss, and Kevin Ollie stepped in and gave a motivational speech, and the Nets came in, and they beat up the Orlando Magic pretty good. The Magic, one of the success stories this season, 19-14. They've played some great basketball, but came into Barclays, and the Nets were fired up, and that was one of the best that they have – I was actually at that game. That was one of the best that they have looked all season. Kevin Ollie with pedigree from UConn, where he won a national championship. I think he's very well respected within the association. Because he's there, normally I wouldn't like agree with the harsh reactions of somebody should get fired, and I don't think somebody should lose their job. I hate that. But I would fear it for them if they continue to play like this, and now all of a sudden, you know, they're 15-25. 17-32, 20-42, whatever it ends up being, you know, where are they going? Is a change necessary? I think if the Nets lose like this 3 to 5 more times, I don't think he can last. I just think it's too much. And if it's again another person that's kind of the scapegoat here, I have been a big Sean Marks person. I respect so much of what he did from this organization when they had nothing and turned it around and signed Durant and Kyrie Irving without giving up assets. I mean, they had a roster. If you look back on it, it's so depressing just how good that roster was. And I had felt like Durant and Irving hijacked the organization and that Marks deserved a second chance. Or, you know, another chance with his own set of rules in a sense. But it does feel like this time around, there's not as much like I don't know what the plan is. And that kind of worries me a little bit with the Nets. You know, what is the plan? What are we doing? Be nice to know, because right now it feels like we're kind of just stranded in the ocean and there's no life preserver.
Like they're just going to trade everybody at the deadline.
Yeah, I mean, at this point, if they're going to keep playing like this, there's no need to have Spencer Dinwiddie, who's a free agent, on the roster. Royce O'Neal, it just doesn't make sense. No. You have to just make the trade and get something in return.
If you're Sean Marks, do you trade a Nick Claxton? Obviously, you just said you would trade a Dinwiddie and Royce. I don't know what their value is per se right now, but if you can get an expiring and even second rounded at this point, you know, Dinwiddie's close to 31% from three. Like, I feel like he was worth definitely maybe 2 first rounders. Maybe that's a little high for you. At least 1 first rounder last year. This year, I'm not sure what that can get you. But what would a Nick Claxton bring in a trade? He's 24 years old. Last year was a defensive player of the year, kind of runner, you know, not runner up, but, you know, in the running for. And I think it's just a very interesting situation. Analytics love him. This year, the eye test hates him. 24 years old, you're going to let him walk? Do you trust Day-Day that much?
I think Dinwiddie would be more interesting to a contender than a Nick Claxton. And I'll give an example, the Knicks. Although they could use a center. So
what about the Lakers?
I'll preface that. But Lakers, another example. Teams need ball, you know, playmaking guards, guys that can shoot. And when you put Dinwiddie as the 6th, 7th option, that's a really incredible role. When he's asked to do everything, it's a little more difficult. And you can see teams that don't have as much success. And it's nothing against Spencer. He's a very good player. But if he's asked to lead your team, it's not going to be as successful. We saw what happened when he was in Washington, and then we saw what happened when he was in Dallas. When he's playing next to a superstar in Luka Doncic, all of a sudden his three-point percentage went up. He had his best career of his life. So if you can get him in a position where he could just be that kind of guy, I think a title team or a team in the mix would love to have him on. I say like the Knicks, who have Jalen Brunson as their lead guard, but what if you could have Spencer Dinwiddie relieve him with minutes, play off the ball, set up and shoot shots, play a little defense, like, boom, that makes sense for the Knicks. Not saying the Nets and Knicks are going to make a deal. Knicks the weird one because he's a free agent. He's 24. Somebody's going to give him a lot of money. Do you feel like he's part of your long-term plans with the Nets? He is, man, he is. It's like if you could just get Dayron and Nick together, like, all right, we've got our star center. But unfortunately, the skill set that each of them has, the other one lacks a little bit. I think, you know, Nick and Spurts obviously can come off the ball and block shots. He's a solid rebounder, but he hasn't shown signs of growth even more where you'd feel comfortable with it. And I do think at this point, like, giving him a big contract, and if you're not winning games, just feels like a waste of time. And I'd actually feel more comfortable and just happy. I kind of just would feel more happy if they made a trade, got something in return, and then didn't have to pay him while they suck at the same time.
You could lose with him. You could lose without him.
Right. Exactly. You're going to be losing regardless. So at least let's get some assets back. So when we are in a better place, maybe we're ready to win. He is a tricky one. It's just so much of it is there. And then sometimes it's just not. I wish the Nets gave him more opportunity actually offensively. I wish we got to see what he could do offensively. Because here and there, he's made some nice shots. He's got a decent touch, it looks like. But he's just kind of catching lob, blocking shots. And is that $25 million a year worth? Probably not. I love Nick. And for the Nets to have him drafted in the early second round and developing him to the player he is, kudos to the Nets. Kudos to Nick Claxton. But it might just not be the timing for both for the organization and him. And I hope if it isn't right, I just don't want to lose him in free agency or go crazy and overpay. And I'm fearful now, especially after seeing the Cam Johnson contract. And I was all for signing Cam, and I thought it was the right decision because he was part of the KD trade. But you can see if you're going to just be wrapping up money and here's 20 for Cam, here's 25 for Nick, and it's like, all right, we've spent all this money, but we suck. What's the point? You know, we got to start fresh. That Ben Simmons contract coming off the books in a year and a half, that'll be $40 freaking million. That's a huge hole that's just eating this cap. $40 million for a guy that doesn't play is tough. It's tough.
How many teams have a max contract on their cap sheet that is just a black hole? Not many.
Not many.
Not many. As a matter of fact, I was talking to a couple of Knicks fans, and I said, I feel like that cap hole, that $40 million contract next year, and where it was like 35 this year or whatever,
yeah.
I feel like that is like the shackles of the Nets. Imagine adding in a max player, or maybe not even a max player, two really good players in place of him. I feel like you look at the roster totally differently.
Oh, yeah. And the problem with Ben, too, was, I mean, when the year started, he got off to a great start. Then he kind of faded, and you were like, okay, Ben he's clearly not the player he was in Philly, but he's better than what he was last year. And if you said, okay, let me just take Ben and take away his contract, I would say Ben's just a good role player for the Nets, yeah, who helps them push tempo, rebounds, has deficiencies. Now, is he worth $35 million? No. But at least if you just look at it as he's a player that's on the team that can help you, okay. Now he doesn't show up. He's not here. And I think it's crazy you're crazy to think he's going to be back. Unfortunately, this is what it is. Maybe he'll come back for two or three games, but it's over. And it's sad too for him because he was all NBA level talent. And the Nets had a little something to start the year with him. And you saw a little bit of it and pushing the tempo. I mean, it was exciting. And now here we are, 35 games later, 34 games later, whatever. And it's a shit show, and he's not here. His cap's there. Bridges isn't developing well. I mean, everything that could go wrong has gone wrong. Outside of Dayron Sharpe being a really good backup center. okay, great.
And it's coming out, instead of all aces, it's just like a total bust everywhere.
Everywhere. This has been such a negative episode, Pete. This is probably in all the Nets podcasts that I have done in my life, and there has been a lot of them, this is the up there with, and I'm not talking about like, you know, after the Bucks game sevens and the worlds where it's just like pure numbness, depression. This is definitely one of the most negative net podcasts I've ever done in my life.
That sounds so horrible. Congrats. Jesus Christ.
Here we are.
All right. I got about two or three more questions, and I'm going to just, you don't have to go too deep into this. What is your favorite Nets jersey?
Like one I own or the one like the style?
It doesn't have to be one that you own. Just what is your favorite one?
Probably the New Jersey Nets.
I'm sorry, before you say, I got to cut you off. There's only one correct answer to this. So I'm warning you now.
Okay. Well, if I get it wrong, it won't be the first time I get something wrong, and it won't be the last time I get something wrong, and it will definitely be one of the billion things I do get wrong. I would say for me personally, I think the most beautiful, so I'll answer this in two parts. I think the most pleasing to the eye for me is the ABA ones with Dr. J. I think those were cool. I think in second place, I love the Drazen Petrovic style ones from the early Nets, 90s, 91, 92. But for me, it's going to be like the 01, 02 blue net jersey because of what it symbolizes for me and my fandom of the Nets getting to the NBA Finals. I know that they did wear those gray jerseys a lot. Never was a huge fan of the gray ones, growing on me a little bit as I get older. But I would say the blue 2001, 2002, like Jason Kidd, Richard Jefferson, Kmart, Kerry Kittle jerseys. Did I get it right?
Listen, you were correct with the Dr. J. That was the correct answer.
Yeah, those are beautiful.
I respect the blue New Jersey. I actually own that jersey. I own a gray Jason Kidd one alternate.
Nice.
I'm surprised you don't like the gray alternate, though. That surprised me a little bit.
I didn't like them when I was watching them live. But now as I look back, I'm like, oh, those were pretty cool. I don't know what, 18-year-old me was thinking. I mean, I know what I was thinking. But I don't know. Yeah, they were all right. But now I look back and I say, yeah, they were pretty cool. I don't know. Maybe I was superstitious. I'm like, why are we wearing these? We're good in the blue. I don't know. I'm not sure. I don't remember exactly.
I got to apologize to you. I lied. There's another question.
Oh, I thought you were going to say my mic was off the whole time.
If you could bring back one jersey for the Nets to bring back as a throwback next year.
Oh, it's that one.
There you go. Nice and easy.
Oh, I'd love it. That'd be so cool. I mean, that'd be, although I don't know if I'd like watching them lose in them.
Ooh.
So maybe not. Maybe not. But I do love those jerseys. Yeah, that would be the answer. Great jerseys.
All right. You want to throw out your plugs and then we're going to wrap it up.
Yeah. Thank you again, Pete, for having me on. Yeah. Check out Bad Weather Fans. I do the podcast with a Knicks fan, Alex at Knicks Central on Twitter. But he's a close friend of mine and, he likes the Knicks. And unfortunately we've done this podcast together. We've done 202 episodes. So we've done it for almost 4 years and he and I started it during the pandemic. And obviously he had to live with the highs of the Nets while the Knicks were on a low front. But the tides have turned where the Knicks are now probably hitting their best times since 2014 ish. Well, the Nets are headed into the dark zone. So yeah, if you want to listen to a podcast where I'm going to be promoting how Knicks are winning, jump on in. But we have a lot of fun and Alex is definitely critical of the Knicks and by no stretch, a homer, very critical of the Knicks. I'll say that.
And in particular, to kind of piggyback on that, I think you guys might have the best Richard Jefferson interview I've ever seen.
Appreciate that.
Like independent media. A lot of fun. I went back, saw all of your old episodes, when you got have former Nets on and whatnot. Highly recommend it.
Thank you.
Check out my Twitter at NetFansYouKnow. Check out the YouTube at NetFansYouKnow. Have a great day. Have a great night. If you're eating lunch, enjoy your lunch. And let's go Nets. We're out.